So I'm not afraid that AI will kill jobs. It will change all our jobs. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure of that. So we have to learn new skills. But I'm not afraid that the jobs itself will not be relevant anymore. But they will be very different from today.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of In Check with FinTech by PCN, where we interview CEOs, founders, and executives from the FinTech space about their personal experiences, their companies, market trends, industry insights, and more. Today, we have the honor to be joined by Alexander Svart, Chief Innovation and Technology Officer at Rabobank. Alexander has been working at Rabobank for over 15 years. Having joined in 2008 as head of cash management operations, he has worked his way up to the top for over a decade, serving in various senior roles. Prior to joining Rabobank, Alexander worked at energy supplier Neon Deutschland for over 6 years in several roles and started his career at Coca-Cola in 1997. In his current role on Rabobank's management board, Alexander is responsible for technology, data analytics, digital transformation, and innovation for the bank. Enjoy listening!
Great, Alexander. So, yeah, maybe to warm things up, looking at your background, what are the similarities between selling soft drinks and leading innovation technology at Rabobank?
That's a nice question. So, first of all, thank you for having me. As similarities, there are some similarities in that sense that when I sold soft drinks, I tried to be as ambitious as possible with the teams I worked with. And that's the same ambition I have today in my job. But of course, the role is very, very different. And that was also for me the reason to stop selling soft drinks and move to other industries.
Yeah. How do you get into this role? I mean, how does that happen? I mean, you came through, for those who don't know, you obviously moved to an energy company, I think, right? And entered Rabobank about 16 years ago.
Yeah.
How do you go from selling soft drinks to a bank?
Yeah, so I studied business administration at Nyenrode, and after that, strategic marketing at Erasmus University, which was part of economics, Master of Economics.
Yeah.
And when I finished my studies, it was kind of obvious to start with a fast-moving consumer goods company. So that's also what I did. I started with Coca-Cola. I really loved the culture there. It was very much passionate and result-driven. But after a few years, I thought, well, if I'm 40 or 50 and I'm still selling soft drinks, that's kind of boring. So that was for me the reason to move on at that point of time. And I went to an energy company, to be honest, by accident. I didn't do so much career planning at that point of time. So I ended up with an energy company, and I had the luck that this energy company was starting with new ventures outside of the Netherlands. At that point of time, nobody talked about startups, but it was actually a startup. So we first went to Belgium and set up an energy company in Belgium. And I did that for, I think, a year. And then a fully Belgian management team was recruited. And then they asked me to do the same trick in Germany together with a few colleagues. And in Germany, I worked for a longer period of time. The company was also more mature there. So it was not only the startup, but we already owned a grid operator in Germany as the only Dutch energy company, and we were active in more regions. So I worked there for 4 or 5 years. I really loved that job. And then I became responsible for IT and operations. And then your question, of course, is why? I think because I liked it. That really started in my youth. My dad was always active on computers. So it was something I liked to do, and In a startup culture, everybody basically takes on what kinds of comes naturally, and this came naturally for me. So at Nuon, at that startup company, I worked in IT and operations, and when it grew, I also grew in position, and I was the only Dutch guy in the German board. And then I moved back to the Netherlands because of private circumstances. In the meanwhile, we got three kids, and my wife finished her studies, and she did a promotion, etc. And then the big question is, where are we going to go next, and then she decided to work in the academic hospital in Utrecht, and I basically decided to move industries, looking for an industry which is similar to energy, but still is bigger in the Netherlands, and that's why I applied to it with Rabobank.
What are similarities then between energy and banking?
They are extremely similar. So it's basically utilities for a big part, and of course payments, for instance, within a bank is also so core to the infrastructure of a country, and that's of course the same with energy. It's also a very complex organization with highly educated people. IT is key for running your processes. It's also not a tangible asset, so people can't grasp the good as if you buy a bottle of soft drinks, you can actually take it from the supermarket, but with a bank account or with an energy bill, that's something different. You also need to forecast. We forecast money within the bank, how money and interest rates develop. In an energy company, you do that with oil prices or gas prices. There's also a lot of data involved, so a lot of similarities. And everybody who worked in both industries immediately recognizes them. And I liked that. So what I didn't like in the soft drinks business was that it was so simple.
Yeah.
But I really loved the complexity of energy, and I found it at the bank. And at the bank, it's even one level up. It's amazing the number of things you have to organize for here, and that makes it very challenging. And I started in our international domain, and during your career, you have to have a little bit of luck. So I had the luck that I was involved in projects which became important for the bank, or my boss made a promotion, and I followed to our next management team, and that kind of helped me in my career. So I was involved in, for instance, rolling out the agile way of working here throughout the bank. I became responsible for the banking app when we had very bad ratings in the App Store, almost 2.0 as a rating. That's not good. And now we are back at 4.5, both in iOS and Android. And well, having the luck of becoming responsible for these kinds of things at the right point in time, that helped me a lot. Yeah.
Luck, of course. I mean, others will say probably it's a bit situational, but I'm sure that there were probably decisions that you made that made you come to where you are today, right? Whether it was going from soft drinks to energy, from energy to banking. But maybe without going through all of your 16 years of experience through Rabobank, do you remember maybe a critical moment in those 16 years of career which was deterministic in where you are today?
Yeah, I think the most critical moment for me was when I noticed that I really like to work with very highly educated people and solve very complex problems. And that basically determined always for the kind of positions I was looking for. And the other important decision for myself was that what I like to do in the core is much more in IT, digital servicing customers, than it is in, let's say, being the very experienced banker. And that decision has been an important one for me within Rabobank, because of course I could have decided to go the path of becoming more experienced in credit management, etc. And I deliberately chose for the IT and the digital part of that. Yeah,
and that made you now to be the CITO of Rabobank.
Yeah,
right. Well, can you maybe give a bit of a flavor of what your role entails?
Yeah. So I'm the job title already says it's innovation and technology. So I'm basically responsible for the innovation process within the Rabobank, and also for basically all the technology we have to serve customers, employees, engineers. You can imagine that the bank uses technology throughout all of its processes, and that's my current role.
All right. Okay. And that means right now, what are kind of your three or four spearheads of your policy?
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. So next to being the CTO, I'm also part of what we call the managing board. That's basically our board of directors within the bank. And I think 5-6 very important topics on my agenda. So first of all, of course, cybersecurity. You can imagine that for a bank, that's always priority one to being secure. And in the past, we had a vault. We had to make sure that bank robbers couldn't get in. And nowadays, everything has become digital. So making sure that our digital vault is as safe as the vault in the past, that's extremely important. Then availability of our services is also something which is extremely important. And that's because, of course, when you go to the banking app, whenever you go to it, you want it to work and you want everything to work. You're so used to the fact that you can do a payment whenever you want or send a payment request whenever you want. To make sure that that's always functioning the whole year round, and even at night when people go in the bar, etc. That's a big thing. So those are the two most important ones. The other thing is we are a very big IT organization, so we constantly have to improve the way we work together. And you see that we have so many multidisciplinary teams. We call them squads within the bank. That making sure that the engineering journey for those squads functions very well is also extremely important. And that's what we call managed services, standardizing at scale, making sure that all these teams can comply to certain policies we have as a bank, make sure that they implement security measures at the right point of time, and standardizing that in such a way that it costs little cognitive load for the teams. That's a very important topic for us as well. And maybe the last two to mention that also gives, I think, a nice bridge to this interview With so many people working for us, psychological safety is very important. We have seen that if we can give engineers an environment in which they feel seen as a person, in which they can give their best, that has a huge impact on how well we perform IT-wise. And last but not least, analytics and specifically generative AI is, of course, high on the agenda, since this really changes how we should look at the bank and the work we do ourselves and which we can automate even further. So that's a big strategic topic as well.
So I hear, thanks for that. I think that's very interesting. I hear a lot of technology-driven agenda points and psychological safety. That seems to be the odd one in the bunch. Why is that so high on the agenda?
Yeah, we deliberately, so I just mentioned that I worked together with a colleague on the Agile program within the bank. And that basically means that you distribute mandate. In the past, people had spreadsheets and then management thought that they could take all the detailed decisions which are needed to develop a feature for a customer, for instance. And we deliberately chose to implement a model where we put a lot of autonomy within the teams. But if you put a lot of autonomy within teams, you also want to create teams which feel very safe, where people can speak up, where if one individual is maybe very knowledgeable about a certain area, but others worry about decisions he or she takes in his or her work, that there's an atmosphere where you can speak up, where you can escalate if that's possible, etc. And that requires a lot of psychological safety. So I think that organizations which put more responsibility on the shop floor, and that's what we really try to do with our squads, where we have highly educated people, very knowledgeable about what they do, then you also should create an atmosphere where they are willing and able to speak up if they don't agree with decisions which are taken. That's extremely important to be in control.
Interesting. I think a lot of people take that for a given, right? That people are known to speak up, especially if you hire highly educated, intelligent people, that they're happy and able to speak up when needed.
Yeah, and that's definitely not the case. We have not only teams which have men and women in them, but we also have many nationalities in them, and everybody has different cultural backgrounds, and those cultural backgrounds also give people different ways to express themselves and to learn to appreciate it and really listen to people. That's not something which automatically happens if you put them in a team.
No, sure, yeah. Okay, to come to indeed kind of the topic of the discussion, AI or generative AI. I think it's interesting to maybe look at your take on it versus some of your other competitors within the Netherlands. But maybe let's talk about your approach to generative AI. Can you give a bit of an insight into that? What is the policy now towards Gen AI within Rabobank?
Yeah. So I think it's first important to stress generative AI is in that sense just another form of AI. And we are already working with analytics for a long, long period of time. So we already do that for 10 years. And for us, it's very important that we use it responsibly, data and also ethically. So information for a bank, we are a bank. So being secure with that information, making sure that if you as a customer give us that information is that we handle it responsibly and ethically, that's extremely important. So that's where it starts, because every analytics starts with good data. And that means that we have a very clear governance of how we manage analytics and also generative AI. Mm-hmm. And we always want to create a right balance between central knowledge and guardrails. So making sure that we are very clear about boundaries and what we do and what we don't do. But on the other hand, also give these squads, which I just mentioned, a lot of initiative to experiment. And finding a right balance with that, that's very important for the way we approach this. Which means that that's also how we have organized ourselves. So when it first was announced, we first said we do a ban on AI.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is to bring rest in order, to make sure that the organization doesn't start off try out everything, because that sounds very cool, but we have to be protective of the data of our customers. So we can't just have 10,000 squads, let's say, running around. So we had to make sure that we get control of the process. And the way we did that is that we created a central governance on it. Mm-hmm. We first started off with a ban, and then quickly after the ban, we communicated that we are going to allow experimentation. But we do this experimentation really in a sandbox setup. Also how we do our innovation process. Every team within the bank can come up with a good idea, and then we basically run those experiments sandboxed. And sometimes we decide not to run an experiment because an experiment which is already running is doing exactly the same. you can imagine that a lot of teams came with all kind of great experiments on summarization. That is one of the examples which Gen AI can do pretty well. But if you already have three or four experiments running for it with summarization, then the big question is, what are we going to learn from the fifth or the sixth experiment? So that's what we try to do. And as soon as we see that the experiment succeeds and that it works, then we also scale it. But if you scale it within a bank, then you also have to adhere to the policies and the frameworks, which we already had in place, because we are already working in the cloud for many years. We are already working with analytics for many years. And this is, of course, a new form of analytics, but it's also not something totally new. And one of the things, for instance, you have to do as a team when you scale something which uses AI is a data protection impact assessment, a standard procedure we do. So these kind of standard procedures we have if we see that experiments are successful in a sandbox environment and we want to scale them.
Is that your biggest fear then? Is it the ethical use, ethical and responsible use that you're the most afraid of, that will be misused, if you will, if you just let everyone experiment with Gen AI and don't take the ban off, if you will?
No, it's not. I mean, maybe to start, I'm never feared about a new technology. Right, yeah. So this has nothing got to do with fear. It has got to do with that we learned a lot in the past of what is smart to do, what isn't smart to do. Mm-hmm. And I really like the saying of the CIO of AkzoNobel. I don't know if you know him. I've read an interview recently with him. He's called Alois Krechting. And what I liked about what he says is he always asks himself the question, are we going to sell more paint with it? Which you can understand if you work at AkzoNobel. Yeah. And for me, that's the essential question as well for the bank. So it's a great technology. I love playing around with it privately. But the big question for the bank is, are we going to deliver better services to the customers? Are we going to do that faster or cheaper or more quality, etc.? If the answer to all those questions is no, then why do we do it?
Yeah, true.
And that's the big risk of getting in love with the solution and not with the problem you want to fix. So we really need a good business case, a good reason why to do this. And that's also why we have a sandbox environment. We first have to understand, does it actually solve a problem better, faster, cheaper, etc. than we do today. So I'm much more afraid of us losing sight of what do we want to solve than of the technology itself. And then, of course, if you can solve something with it, then of course you have to scale it in such a way that a huge organization can work with it. We have almost 50,000 employees within the bank. If you want to give them access to something to a new tool, which we recently did with Copilot, chat, then of course you have to make sure that you have understood how people are going to use it, and are they going to use it, and how do we have to educate them, etc. So it's not afraid in that sense, but it's just being smart from the past, and we've learned a lot of things there, how to deal with that.
Ready for a dynamic explosion of innovation, connections, and game-changing insights? Money 2020 Europe, the ultimate convergence of money minds, is back to electrify your industry knowledge and turbocharge your networking game. Join the unstoppable force of 8,000 plus movers, shakers, and innovators from more than 2,300 companies spanning banks, fintechs, tech giants, startups, policymakers, and more. This is your chance to seize the reins of transformation and redefine the future of finance, all under one electrifying roof. Grab your pass now and secure your spot among the visionaries, pioneers, and power players. Use code TPCN to save 200 euros on your pass. This is your ticket to unlocking a world of money possibilities.
On the other side, then, what are you most excited about? What are maybe some use cases that you've seen or that are currently being experimented with? I don't know how much you can share, but is there particular things where you're excited about with Gen AI and Rabobank?
No, definitely. And I think a few ones where I was really impressed about. So one of the things which we did is we have a Copilot chat. You probably know the feature. Mm-hmm. And that's live for all our employees. And it's really nice to see that, well, not everybody is using it, to be honest on that as well. But we have a core group who are very intensively using that. So it's very nice to see if you make that available that people start using it, and also people start using it very intensively. But it also shows a big group is not using it, that we still need to do something on education. You probably have tried it yourself as well, but writing a good prompt is not easy. And you also have to learn how it works. So I did a lot of courses myself just to understand how prompting works and why there's a difference in how you ask the question to the system, that you have to iterate on it as well. So that's one of the things. The other thing where I'm very positive about is we implemented GitHub Copilot for our engineers. And of course, this group is much more used to doing smart prompting. They already did that also in their web browser. And that's where you see that the adoption goes much quicker. So we did a lot of pilots with Java developers, giving them Copilot. And if you saw how positively they reacted on it, even saying, if the bank doesn't pay it for me, I would pay myself.
Okay.
That's, of course, that really says something. And it's also the usage. So we monitor if people actually use it. So not only are positive about it, but actually often use it. And you see, especially with engineers, they really use it often. And it helps them to have a pair programmer who gives them feedback and gives them alternatives that just makes your work better and faster. And I'm very positive about how we're using AI currently in our contact center organization. So Rabobank has a very big contact center. You can imagine we get millions of contacts, customer contacts a year through chat or through telephone, for instance. And that's where we use AI. So one of the examples which I really like is you can imagine if a close one has died or if you want to buy a home, etc., and you call with one of our commercial people, then in that kind of conversation, the person on the Rabo side, so our employee, wants to very much focus on you as a human, especially, for instance, if your father has recently died. And that's, of course, a very emotional moment for our client. And if you want to very much focus on the human on the other side of the line, you can imagine that making notes and writing down the actions is more complicated. And that's, for instance, where we currently already used AI for our total call center operations to make sure that the summarization of the conversation is done because the AI listens in.
Yeah.
And that also the actions which we should take after the conversation are listed. And that works very, very well. And the big advantage is that you can have much more focus on the human being on the other side of the line. And so that's where you, I think, see that technology and being even more focused on the other person on the other side is working very well.
Yeah, so you can focus on higher quality of work, whether that is in the contact center, whether it's the code that you deliver and you have someone else looking, a AI coder that is checking the quality of your code. It's really to enhance the work that people already do.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so I'm not afraid that AI will kill jobs. It will change all our jobs. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure of that. So we have to learn new skills. But I'm not afraid that the jobs itself will not be relevant anymore, but they will be very different from today.
True. Yeah. That sounds very similar in terms of the contact centers and in terms of the, in your case, GitHub Copilot to what some of your competitors do as well. What is your view on that? Do you generally, I don't know, do you sit down with the bigger banks to talk about, okay, where can we, within the framework that we apply, use Gen AI, or is it very much everyone's on their own and you see what happens, or do you share experiences, or how does that work?
Yeah. So you can, I think these are all the obvious things we just discussed. So that's also why other banks are doing this. I mean, and it's almost impossible not to hear these use cases, because you can imagine that all the suppliers are constantly contacting us to come for interviews. Of course, we also have sessions where a lot of technology leaders within not only the banking industry but also in telcos, etc., come together. So there's a lot of knowledge sharing happening within IT within the Netherlands but also internationally. So it's not very difficult to get acquainted with what's possible in the world. It's more difficult to choose, to be honest. So if you see how much initiatives are currently available throughout the world and how many new solutions get, let's say, published on the internet every day, then choosing where to put your money and where to invest first, that's even more difficult than getting IDs. That's not a challenge, to be honest. And I think that we're still in the infancy phase. So I also preparing for this podcast, I looked at Wikipedia to see what happens with electricity and maybe some nice facts which you probably didn't know. I didn't know, to be honest. But 600 BC... there was a Greek philosopher who first saw that there is static electricity.
Wow.
And then in 1800, the battery was invented. That shows, let's say, how much time there is between seeing something and developing then a storage, for instance, for it. And I think that's the biggest challenge for AI. So we're just in the infancy phase. We're basically just using the models for which they can automatically do as summarization or code generation or text generation or But if you see how many opportunities there will be there in the future where we can't even think about, so we are still asking a question and getting an answer, but you could also give the AI probably in the future a task to solve, or so much more outcome-based, I want to accomplish this instead of saying, I want to have an answer on this question. And I think that, so we're in that sense just experimenting with the stuff which is very obvious, but I think we have to look further ahead and see what things we can't think of today could be done with AI, or combining models, or asking one model to make the plan and the other model to actually execute parts of the plan, because you will get models which are specialized in certain tasks probably as well, next to models which can do a lot.
It's interesting to hear that, put it in perspective with electricity, right? So 600 before Christ, someone found out that there was statical electricity.
Electricity, and then in 1800 after Christ, first battery was invented. But of course, the technology development goes much faster nowadays. Yeah. So it's maybe not, but it's impressive to see. I think we still have a lot of opportunities ahead with analytics in general and Gen AI specifically.
Totally, yeah. What are some of the maybe then, so let's not label them fears, but more concerns maybe around, I mean, there's a lot to do around the bias in AI algorithms, misinformation, obviously is being trained by certain sets of data, which give it a bias or maybe give it incorrect answers, which we then take for truth, which I think is a problem, right? I think there's kids in school writing book summaries with it. Don't check for actual
correctness. Yeah,
correctness. Thank you. Yeah. So, what are your? Do you agree with those concerns, or how do you view those from kind of the Rabobank's perspective?
Yeah. So, data is a big challenge, and especially because data basically, the data from the past basically reflects society from the past. And then the big question is data biased, or is data just how society was? Yeah. That's almost a philosophical question. And sometimes, I think recently there was something in the press about Google training its model on historical data, but then also doing some guardrails on it, which then produced an American president with a dark skin, which was not the case, but it was kind of because they wanted to make the AI give the answer much more focused on what we want to be than instead of what we were as a society. So that's a big challenge. And there's also not an easy solution, because if you want to have an historical correct answer, then it will be not biased, it will be realistic, but we will not always perceive it as how it should be. So that will be a challenge. Another big challenge will be, it's called generative AI, so it generates data. It generates music, pictures, videos, text, etc. We want to know what has been machine generated and what hasn't been machine generated. Or maybe what has been produced by a human and corrected by a machine, or produced by a machine and corrected by a human. So you'd probably need labeling to truly understand the value of what you have. Intellectual property will be a challenge if you generate more. So who owns the IDs which you have generated, or the music which you have generated? Do we get issues there? I think, but that's not only for the bank. There's a big challenge in the dependency of the whole supply chain. So I'm not sure how much you are aware, but we have very little companies who can actually produce very high quality chip producing machines, ASML being the one of them.
Yeah.
And then we have NVIDIA, who actually produces all the video cards, or at least designs them, and then TSMC in Taiwan builds them, and it's only single parties in that value chain. And then you have all the tech then you have a limited set of tech companies who can actually develop foundational models. So the world becomes dependent, and the banks as well, from a very thin supply chain, which is a big risk as well, I think. We have to think about.
So innovation and the development of Gen AI is almost dependent on the supply of those elements of technology.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, if we don't have the NVIDIA processors, then the big tech companies cannot train their models.
Yeah.
That's why they're all buying these very expensive video cards, graphical cards. And so this is something I think to consider as well. And I think an important one to mention, which is not often heard, is also cost management. So when all the companies moved to the cloud, everybody was telling how great it was and that we could reduce costs with it. But cloud has brought a lot, eh? So we would definitely, it's definitely a good choice for us to move more and more of our applications to the cloud. But the cloud is also like a big candy store. So every engineer can actually access all kinds of toolings and services within the cloud and open them and start them. And that increases actually the bill from us to our cloud provider. Those, and that's fine if that's needed for your work. But if you open a spinner on a virtual machine and you don't use it, you still pay for it. That's something I think what will happen with generative AI as well. So you have to make sure that you're very conscious about, do you really need such a big model? Or can you have a smaller model with less nodes and still answer the questions you want to ask to the model as good as with the bigger model? Because the compute you need for a small model will be much less than for a bigger model. So there's a lot of maturity we have to gain as an organization, and especially when I talked about decentralized team, the teams in our organization have to acquire that knowledge so they can manage how they use these models as they are doing with cloud. So it's not, let's say, concerns in the sense that it keeps me awake at night, but it's also not as easy as just to say, open it up and let everybody run. Because at the end of the day, we still have to serve our customers and make money to make sure that the bank stays secure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I guess you're touching one of the most precious goods of people, right? Which is money.
Absolutely.
And they are already fearful of. I think the younger generation maybe less so, but especially the older generations, which obviously is the biggest part of the population, are very concerned about what the impact might be of AI on their own, indeed, data protection on their own being, and in this case, also their own money.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's always number one with us. So there's no worries there, but you can't, of course, shut your eyes for new technology as well.
True.
So we're very open to it, but always conscious, doing the analysis first before we start running. But then if it works, we also scale it quickly. Yeah.
So looking ahead, then, so you still right now have an AI ban in place?
No, so that has changed in that sense. So first we really did a total ban. What we do now is that we more treat it like shadow IT. And maybe I should explain it a little bit what we mean by shadow IT. I mean, everybody with a credit card nowadays can buy a SaaS solution. Eh? So that's very easy to do. And it sometimes also happens within our company. And we really try to prevent that from happening. And the reason is that managing your IT landscape in a proper way also requires that you do IT on a very professional level. And that means that all the IT is part, let's say, of my department, just to make sure that we run the processes in a very professional way, that we do security in a professional way, et cetera, et cetera. That also happened with Gen AI. So at first we said, don't use it. Then we, of course, started with all kinds of pilots, and some of them have scaled, also to all of the employees. And we are now getting more in the mode of managing it as business as usual in that sense. So you can imagine that a lot of our software suppliers who, for instance, deliver SaaS solutions to us, they sometimes implement Gen AI solutions within their SaaS solution. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have to deal with that as well. So it's not that we have the total ban anymore, but we still are very strict and manage it very strictly, do the pilots, keep control of the process, but try to embed it as much as possible within the whole organization.
Very conscious of the way it's used, basically, which I think makes sense. Like you said, you have 50,000 people working, you have millions of customers. So yeah, I think you have a role to play there as well.
Yeah.
What's your vision for Gen AI in Rabobank? I mean, are you looking to be like Bank, an AI-powered bank at some points? Do you think that is realistic, or is that not the ultimate goal?
Yeah, so I would never use a technology to describe what we want to be for customers, because the reason customers bank with us is exactly as you say, and I think that's also the same for the younger generation. They want to make sure that if they put their money on a bank account, that it's safe, that they can also always access it, etc. If AI helps us to do that better, we will use it. But it's never our objective to become technology first. It's our objective to serve the customers better. And of course, you will see that more and more, that requires more and more IT, but that's never the main purpose. Yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Okay. So it's to enhance value to your customers rather than using it for the sake of innovation.
Absolutely. And maybe I can give a very clear example, which I think which makes it immediately understandable. I mean, if you buy your first home, even if you're very highly educated, etc., it just feels nice to talk to a human being. And we've noticed that with younger and older customers. It doesn't matter. It's a big decision in your life. You lend a lot of money, at least for you personally, it's a lot of money. And then you want to check with somebody. And that's often when people want to speak to a person. That doesn't have to be in the office of a bank. It can be at your home. It can also be via video conferences, but you want a human interaction. But if you already have your third or your fourth mortgage, then it's just a transaction. You want to do it whenever it suits you. And maybe that's fully digital. You don't even want to talk to somebody because it only costs you time. I think that will be always important. So the need of the customer will be very dependent if how secure or insecure he or she feels about something. And nobody wants to open a payment account by talking to somebody and filling in forms. You want to do that quickly with a press of the button. But maybe if you're older and you want to open a bank account for one of your grandchildren, you do want to talk to a person. So it depends a lot on what the customer wants, how we are going to automate this.
And that's what I like to think, is that human interaction can't be replaced. But then you see all these videos of people doing video interviews with an actual AI, or having a conversation with an actual AI via video. I think that's what I'm starting to be concerned. Like, is my job going to be replaced by just an AI video, just video calls with potential clients? And is there maybe an AI on the other side of the line as well, right?
Yeah.
It's just saying, yeah, okay, we'll buy the service or this product or we won't, based on previous decisions we made, because they're trained by data in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a very good question. And I wouldn't trust myself into having the answer on this. And I think nobody has.
No.
So I think the nice example is, for instance, what you saw with music. Eh? So there's a lot of music generated by AI from a few years ago, and you automatically hear that it's generated. But last week, I heard music produced by a website or a tool which is called Suno.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it.
No.
And that sounded so good. So you basically prompt the kind of music you want to hear, and it already sounded so realistic compared to what was possible a few years ago, that I really don't know what will happen in 5 or 10 years. And that feels very uncomfortable for us as human beings, because we feel unique by the fact that we can do this. But the question is that makes us unique. So it's also looking in the mirror and see what does really make differentiates us from machines in that sense.
Yeah, I just wonder if the same with paintings and pictures, with using certain prompts, you can obviously create a picture or a painting. I think right now it's amazing and it's super cool that it can be done. But I like to think that at a certain point we'll be bored out and be like, yeah, okay, it's generated by a machine in a couple of seconds. The same with music.
Yeah.
So you miss that kind of artistical kick out of it, I guess. Maybe that
and,
is.
And I want to believe the same. Eh? So I'm as human as you are. So I really want to believe the same. But then just challenging you. Eh? So if I listen to Spotify and they know my history, and I've listened to Spotify for 5 or 10 years, and they know exactly what kind of music I like, and which music I listen to the end, and which songs I break, etc. So they have a ton of information. And they know, for instance, where I'm interested in, where I search for, and what interests me outside of music. How difficult would it then be for an AI to generate a song about something which interests me? That's the big question. And I think that, that will be a learning experience for us all. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I like to think right now that if that happens to me and I know that it's from a machine, I'll be less impressed than it's from an artist. But maybe I'm just trying to defend here the human being still being there, being involved in these kind of processes.
Yeah, I feel with you. I have the same first reaction, and I'm just not sure. I just don't know if that will be the case.
No, exactly. Yeah, we'll see.
It feels better for us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why we're saying it. Yeah. I guess. Yeah. Great, Alexander. Well, thank you very much. Great to have you on the show and have you share your insights also. Well, generally about Gen AI, but also about Rabobank's approach. Good luck with what to me seems like a very big challenge.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of In Check with FinTech. If you liked what you heard, rate our podcast on Spotify and follow us to get updated with our latest episodes. Are you looking for some exclusive content? Then don't forget to follow our LinkedIn page, PCN, and check out our website, teampcn.com.